This week, more businesses started to resume production. It's back to work. The world is slowly starting to boot back up after several weeks of sheltering at home. But we do not yet know what the world is going to look like on the other side of COVID-19. But I'm fairly certain that it's not going to look the same as it did before. The same applies to our community at Beth Emmanuel. I've been speaking to you about the birth pains of Messiah, but today I want to leave off that subject for a week and speak to you about the growth pains of Beth Emmanuel. This is another of those sermons in the It's Too Jewish series. If you haven't already heard those, you should start with them. You can find the audios for those teachings on our website at bethemmanuel.org. It's now been more than 2 months since we closed the doors at 828 3rd Street in beautiful historic Hudson, Wisconsin. Prior to that interruption, I was offering a series of teachings on the distinction between Jewish and Gentile identity within Beth Emmanuel Messianic Synagogue and discussion about salvation. I was trying to resolve, one, growing resentment among the Gentile members of the community against the Jewish members of the community, two, disenfranchisement among the Gentile members of the community regarding their role and place within the synagogue service, three, conflation of Jewishness and righteousness and right standing before God, four, confusion over the meaning of Jewish identity, which results, of course, in confusion over the meaning of Gentile identity. These are growing pains. Beth Emmanuel is growing in several respects. We are growing in numbers of families. We are growing in size. We are growing in membership. We are growing in the number of Jewish people in the community. And we are growing in our understanding of the distinction theology taught and practiced by the apostles in the New Testament. That's all good. That's for sure. But it's causing some growing pains. In a strange way, this forced shutdown is a godsend for our community. It's an opportunity for a hard reset. Imagine you had a computer that is all gummed up with too many applications running, malware running in the background, extra programs you don't use anymore, obsolete and unnecessary software which isn't even compatible with the current operating system, and that's why the thing keeps crashing. There is all sorts of stuff jamming up the memory and the processor. And it starts behaving very sluggishly. So you shut it down and do a factory reset. You reinstall the software that you want, the stuff that's supposed to be there. COVID-19 is offering us the opportunity to do a hard reboot like that. And we need a hard reboot because we have a lot of old programs and software running in the background, and probably some spiritual malware too. We have a lot of obsolete stuff that was installed way back under One Law. It's like when distinction theology came out, we installed it too, but we never uninstalled One Law theology, so they keep conflicting in the background. When we started the community, our understanding of distinction between Jews and Gentiles in the body of Messiah was the complete polar opposite of what it is today. In those days, we believed there was no difference or distinction among the disciples of Yeshua, and that therefore the Gentile disciples had all the same rights, responsibilities, functions, roles, and duties as the Jewish members. That was a lucky mistake for us to make, because without that theological misunderstanding, we could never have created a Messianic synagogue. We didn't have 10 Jews, so we counted Gentiles for a minyan. We didn't have enough Jewish men to conduct a Torah service with a scroll, so we conducted Torah services with Gentiles. We didn't have Jews competent to read the Hebrew from a Torah scroll on Shabbat, so we raised up Gentiles to do so, and so forth and so on. We made no distinctions. But those days are long gone, and it's time to make sure that we have properly uninstalled those ideas. There are several points of interest in our Torah portion which relate directly to the issue of distinction. Our Torah portion for this week is Achorimot and Kedoshim, a double portion. In Achorimot, the Torah teaches us the service of the high priest on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. On this day, the high priest has the responsibility and the privilege of entering the Holy of Holies to carry out the atonement ritual. Not even the other priests are allowed to enter with him, nor are the Levites, and certainly not the laymen among the Israelites. That is to say, the common Jew is excluded from this ceremonial function. Did the common layman from the tribe of Judah or the tribe of Benjamin feel disenfranchised because he was not allowed to bring the incense into the Holy of Holies or sprinkle blood upon the Ark of the Covenant? Did the man from Zebulun say to the other people in his tribe, "Well, If I can't go into the Holy of Holies, I guess the tabernacle is just not for us. We should go start our own tabernacle. We'll call it Zebulon. Essentially, that's what Korah and his followers wanted. They wanted an end to distinction within the nation. We'll talk about Korah and his followers when we come to that parsha. But the synagogue is a daughter of the temple. The synagogue services are extensions of the temple services, and, just like in the temple services, there are specific assignments and roles and responsibilities. Another point of interest occurs later in the Torah portion where Hashem tells the children of Israel that the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, is going to vomit out the wicked Canaanites. So he warns the children of Israel not to commit the sins of the Canaanites, lest the land vomit them out too. This teaches us that certain commandments of the Torah are incumbent not just upon Jewish people, but also upon Gentiles, and even upon Canaanites. From this, we derive the concept of the commandments incumbent upon the sons of Noah, which means upon all human beings. Every human being is a Ben Noach, a son of Noah, and there are certain universal laws of morality which apply to every human being, and the Canaanites were violating those laws. Everyone is a Ben Noach. Even Messianic Gentiles and Jews. But the Torah portion also specifies certain commandments which apply to another group of people, that is, the stranger dwelling among Israel. This person is called a Ger Toshav, which literally means the dwelling stranger. This person is not Jewish, but he is in a category distinct from the Ben Noach. There is a distinction between the Ger Toshav and the Ben Noach. He's not just like every other human being because, in a sense, he is part of the nation of Israel. It is with respect to this type of stranger dwelling in the midst of the nation that the Torah warns the Jewish people not to mistreat the stranger, but to remember that you were strangers in Egypt, and it says, "You shall love the stranger as yourself." This is an important rule to govern interactions within the Messianic community. In Leviticus 17, the Torah portion says regarding the Ger Toshav that he shall not offer sacrifices outside the temple or participate in idolatrous sacrifices. It says that the Ger Toshav shall not consume blood. It says that he shall not eat the meat of an animal that has not been slaughtered. Instead, he shall pour out its blood and cover it with the earth. Leviticus 17:13. And in Leviticus 18, it says that the Ger Toshav must keep the same rules governing sexuality as the rest of the nation. The apostles used these laws from this Torah portion to determine the status of Gentile disciples in the midst of the Messianic Jewish community. The apostolic decree in Acts 15 summarizes these laws with the words, "For it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us to lay on you no greater burden than these requirements, that you abstain from what has been sacrificed to idols, from blood, from what has been strangled, the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality." Acts 15:28-29. In that story, the apostles agreed that it is important to distinguish between Jews and Gentile disciples, and that Gentile disciples are not required to keep the whole Torah as Jews are, but they also decided that Gentile disciples are not in the same category as other human beings. Instead, they occupy this middle category, the Ger Toshav, the strangers among Israel, and that is where they left us. The apostles pictured the disciples of Yeshua worshiping together, like one body with different parts. Just as a human body has different parts with different roles and functions, likewise, the body of Messiah. The feet are not the hands, and the hands are not the feet. The eye is not the ear is not the eye. But all these parts work together, function together, honor one another, and need one another to make the whole. According to the vision of the New Testament, there should be both Jews and Gentiles worshiping together in the community of Yeshua. There should be both slave and free. There should be both male and female. If you are confused about the difference between a Ben Noach and a Ger Toshav and a Yehudi, that is, a Jew, please see the 2015 edition of my book, Restoration, Returning the Torah of Moses to the Disciples of Jesus. Make sure it's the 2015 edition, though. You will find three new chapters in the 2015 edition that were not in the original edition, which explain Acts 15 and the decision of the apostles. All of this confusion has to do with the revelation that the Apostle Paul received from our Master Yeshua. Prior to that revelation, the apostles assumed that every Gentile who wanted to become a disciple of their master Yeshua the Messiah and be eligible for the kingdom in the world to come must also become Jewish. The apostle Paul realized this was a great error. He saw that God does not intend on redeeming only Israel, but also the nations. He saw that God had sent Yeshua to save all human beings from sin and death, and that Yeshua's resurrection marked the beginning of a future transformation that would apply to humanity in general, indeed to all creation, not merely to Israel. Therefore, he taught that Gentile disciples should not become Jewish, nor should they consider themselves obligated to the 613 commandments of the Torah, which would define them as Jewish. Instead, they should observe those commandments which applied to them as Gentiles. This is distinction theology, and we see it worked out in Acts 15 and in all the writings of Paul. We dare not mess with that. It's really important to maintain distinction. To do otherwise, to do as we used to do here at Beth Emmanuel, where we said there is no difference between a Jew and a Gentile, is to contradict the authority of the apostles and the New Testament. Some of you may be confused about who is a Jew. What exactly do we mean by Jewish identity? It's a national identity. I can best illustrate it with an analogy to another form of national identity, and that is American citizenship. To be a citizen, you must either be born American or naturalized as an American. It's possible to be any race or ethnicity and still be an American. And it's also possible to have American ancestry and not be an American citizen. The same applies to being halakhically legally Jewish. One who is halakhically Jewish, legally Jewish, is part of the national identity of the nation of Israel. I don't mean the modern state of Israel. It's possible to have Jewish ancestry and not be halakhically Jewish, and it's possible to have no Jewish ancestry at all and be completely halakhically Jewish. If your mother is legally Jewish, you are born into it. If she's not, you need to undergo a conversion, which is basically the same as naturalization, before you can be considered halakhically Jewish, legally Jewish. According to the Messianic Jewish Rabbinical Council, a Jewish father also counts. But that remains controversial. Someone who has Jewish ancestry, but not a Jewish mother or parent, is called Zer Yisrael, seed of Israel. They are still Jewish, but not legally Jewish. This person is ethnically Jewish, but not nationally Jewish. And for this person, if he or she wants to be considered halakhically Jewish, part of the nation, he or she must undergo a conversion ritual like anyone else. Imagine a British citizen with American grandparents who wanted to become an American citizen. He or she must still undergo naturalization. But even though we teach distinction theology, we don't really practice it very well. There's a lot of ambiguity at Beth Emmanuel. I think most people know the difference between Jewish identity and Gentile identity. That's clear. We don't have non-Jews in our community who think they are Jews, which is sometimes a problem in other Messianic communities. But we do have confusion about the distinction between Jewish obligation to the Torah and Gentile obligation, between Jewish roles in the community and Gentile roles in the community. I'll give you some examples. Does a Gentile woman need to practice the laws of family purity and visit the mikveh? Does a Gentile need to cease from malacha to observe the Shabbat and Yom Tov? Can a Gentile drive on Shabbat or not? Does a Gentile need to have a kosher kitchen? Can a Gentile eat in a non-kosher restaurant or not? Does a Messianic Gentile wife need to cover her hair in public? Does a Gentile man need to cover his head in public? There's sort of a double message in our community, a sort of, well, you don't have to, but you really should. That's confusing, and it's perpetuating confusion. Going forward, we need to be brutally clear and direct about these issues and all other issues of obligation and Jewish practice. We need to remove the ambiguity and to make the distinction that we preach clear. I'm not talking about the rules of our kitchen. We conduct our kitchen under strict laws of kashrut and Shabbat observance so that everyone can participate and everyone can eat together. That's as it should be on the community level. But within a person's individual home, it doesn't usually make much sense for a Gentile to practice strict kashrut Likewise, there's no obligation for a Gentile male to cover his head, and no need for him to do so in public or private. But within the synagogue, yes, he needs to cover his head as a matter of synagogue decorum. That's just a universal standard. A guy goes to a synagogue, he puts on a kippah. There are laws that do apply to Gentile disciples. For example, there are dietary laws that do apply to Gentile disciples, but they are not the same laws. There are family purity laws that do apply to Gentile disciples, but they are not identical to Jewish practice. If you are confused about this, or don't understand how any one particular law or custom applies to you as a Gentile, ask the leadership. Ask me. Don't ask other people in the community for their opinion. Don't ask perceived leaders. Ask the actual leadership. We'll clear it up for you. And if we don't know the answer, we will consult one another and get you a solid answer based on halakhic sources and the best counsel of the New Testament. According to the Apostle Paul, the Jewish worship services and the Torah was given by God into the hands of the Jewish people. God gave these things to the nation of Israel. They are custodians over the Torah and the worship. All through the New Testament, the apostles honored that and participated in that system. They attended the temple and worshiped in the temple. They attended synagogue and worshiped in the synagogues. They never suggested a new innovation to change the way the temple services should be conducted or that the synagogue services should be conducted. On the contrary, Paul sternly warned the Gentile disciples in the Roman community to observe the rulings of the authorities and to respect the dietary and halakhic concerns of the Jewish members of the community, even though those concerns did not apply directly to them as Gentiles. That's the reasoning behind our adoption of a traditional liturgical form at Beth Emmanuel. Here's the thinking. If we are going to do synagogue services, let's do them according to the rules, because otherwise we are just making things up, and why are we doing any of it? That's why we transitioned from Beth Emmanuel Sabbath Christian Fellowship to Beth Emmanuel Messianic Jewish Synagogue. It's not a path for everyone. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not been a happy transition for everyone. I wouldn't recommend it for other communities of Yeshua unless they have a strong Jewish presence and strong Jewish leadership. In the absence of those two things, it doesn't make much sense. Nevertheless, it's what we did. It's the direction we took. And we intend to follow it through. All of this is explained in the series on our website titled, It's Too Jewish. If you haven't heard that series of teachings, consider it a prerequisite for this one. If it's been a long time, you might want to review those teachings to understand where I am coming from. I believe that it is important for us to do what we are doing at Beth Emmanuel as a tikkun, a correction, for what went wrong in the early church. In the early church, when the Gentiles became the majority and began to feel disenfranchised over not being Jewish, they ejected Judaism and the Jews with it. We are making a tikkun, a correction, for that enormous shift in the body of Messiah. This is what the Messiah himself has called us to do. It's a big part of our mission. And if it is a mission from Messiah, we need to do it well and not just make half measures. The shutdown under COVID-19 brings us to a stop. It gives us an opportunity to reconfigure things before we restart. Distinction is going to change the way we do synagogue services and the way that our Torah services are conducted. Up until now, we have been conducting what the rest of the Jewish world could consider to be an illegal Torah service. How so? According to the rules of traditional Jewish practice, we shouldn't even be using a Torah scroll for the service unless we have 10 halakhically Jewish men present. A person might object and say, well, what about Jesus? Doesn't he change these things? But Jesus did not come to change the halakha or overturn Judaism, did he? He came to seek and save the lost. He came to redeem Israel. He came to bring the kingdom. When COVID-19 became a concern, we announced that we would no longer be counting minions because we didn't want to place the expectation upon anyone to be present for services. This was before we closed the doors. That decision gives us the opportunity to reboot and start fresh when we resume services. Counting Gentiles for a minion obscures distinction between Jewish identity and Gentile identity. We will no longer be doing that. Going forward, a minion will be counted only when there is the potential for 10 halakhically Jewish men to be present at the service. That's what a minion is. Is there such a thing as a Gentile minion? Sure, there can be. But it's not a halakhic requirement. And if it's not a requirement, why would we impose that on anyone? Why not follow instead our master's words, where two or three are gathered? You don't need to be counted in a minion to fully participate in the prayer services. Ask Jewish women about that. You should think of the minion like you would think of the presence of the priesthood. That's where the concept comes from. There was a minion of priests necessary for the temple service to get started. You needed the priesthood present to light the altar fires and make the sacrifice. But the sacrifice is made on behalf of all Israel who are gathered there in the temple courts, praying together, worshiping together, at the times of prayer. Just because they weren't priests doesn't mean they were excluded from participating. When it comes to conducting a Torah service or a full synagogue service, then the concept of minion becomes relevant, and in that case, we're talking about a halakhically Jewish minion. The concept of the halakhically Jewish minion is at the center of the synagogue service. When we restart services, we will no longer call Gentiles up as the Olim to read from the Torah. This has implications for the shape of a bar mitzvah and a ben noach celebration. There will be a clearer difference. We're going to reserve the positions of Baal Korei and Aliyah for the Jewish men of the community. There may be some exceptions to that rule in the form of contributing members of the service who have more or less been grandfathered into certain roles, but I'm speaking in broad general terms. We certainly have not worked out all the details for how this will look. This was being discussed by the elders before the shutdown. We will reserve the use of the scroll for those occasions when we have a Jewish minion, as is the practice in other synagogues. I anticipate that a regular minion might not be too far away, perhaps sooner than we think. On all other occasions, we will still read from the Torah portion and the prophets, but we will utilize the chumash and just conduct an informal reading from the parsha to the community. That will be a big change, but a healthy step that will emphasize the priority of the Jewish presence. Think of it like a temple service. What if there weren't any priests present? Would you just go ahead and make the sacrifices anyway? King Saul thought so. That didn't work out well for him. When we do have a minion, out comes the scroll, and we'll make sure that there will be opportunities for Gentiles to participate in the Torah service also, to also receive a blessing, to also read scriptures publicly to the community, and so forth. But there are certain roles that should be reserved for the Jewish members of the community who have the obligation of conducting the Torah service. Sometimes, when a Gentile disciple hears something like this, he says, "What makes that Jewish person more righteous than me, that he has this privilege?" But as we have previously learned, it's not about righteousness at all. Being Jewish or not Jewish is a matter of the physical. It's a physical, flesh-level thing, like being male or female, or being American or not being American. It does not indicate anything about your righteous standing before God, the status of your soul, or the redemption you've experienced in Messiah. It has nothing to do with the salvation of your soul or your relationship to God as a son or a daughter of God through the Messiah. It has nothing to do with being a spiritual son or daughter of Abraham either. It says nothing about your spiritual value. It's only on the flesh, a formality, so to speak, that pertains to the outward side of things, but not the inner. It's important for each person to be the person that God made him or her to be. Don't forget that your soul is here on a mission that can only be fulfilled by you. You are exactly the person that God needed you to be in order to fulfill his plan and complete his universe. When God made the heavens and the earth, He saw that only one thing was missing. You. And that's why you are here, as it says in the Siddur. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, for having made me according to your will. Remember that you are a spiritual being wearing a brilliant disguise. Some of you are disguised as men, and some of you as women. Some of you are disguised as Jews, and some of you as Gentiles. But that's just a disguise on the outside. Therefore, it's completely inappropriate for a Jewish person to say, I wish I was a Gentile, or for a Gentile person to say, I wish I was Jewish. As Paul puts it, for in one spirit, we are all baptized into one body. Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all made to drink of one spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear would say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the sense of hearing? If the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as it is, God has arranged the members in the body, each one of them as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. 1 Corinthians 12:13-21. All of this is relevant to us at Beth Emmanuel because it's our vision to conduct a traditional synagogue that functions as a house of prayer for all nations, not just for Jewish people, but also for Gentiles. And we have not forgotten that this community has been by and large created by faithful Gentile disciples of Yeshua who have sacrificed enormously for the sake of the community. It's important for our Jewish members to remember that this is not a Jewish community. Neither is it a Gentile community. It's a mixed community, a house of prayer for all nations. As such, it's necessary for all of us to respect one another and to cooperate for the glory of our Master Yeshua, in whom there is no division or jealousy. Here's the bottom line. There are some things that we do at Beth Emmanuel that have needed to change for a long time. The shutdown under COVID-19 gives us the opportunity to address several of those things so that when we resume services, these lingering issues will be resolved. Once the issues are resolved, we don't need to waste time worrying about them. We can go on to the important stuff of the kingdom and the message of salvation in our Master Yeshua. Our desire is that when he comes, we are ready to greet him with our house in order, a house of prayer for all nations, where both Jews and Gentiles belong together in the body of Messiah, worshiping God. If you have questions or concerns about what any of this means, don't speculate over it or murmur with one another over it. Ask me. Ask the leadership. That's what we are here for. Shabbat Shalom. Stay safe and healthy.